Andy, how's it going this week, man?
It's going. Yeah, it's been kind of a weird week where like a lot of just like life things get in the way with appointments and calls and just other things and just getting caught up on stuff. And like, it's been a week where it's been like, I've been busy the whole time, but feel like I've not got a ton done, but I don't know. How's your week been going?
It's good. As we're recording this, we're in the kind of final stretch before the election. We're not going to talk about politics here, but we voted remotely or whatever, mail-in, and that was received a couple weeks ago. So that's cool. So we've done our part, but I'm seeing a lot of like vote now, even in Squadcast, the tool we use to record this podcast, they have like a vote now banner on their homepage. I was like, wow, that's like really front and center. I guess it's like, it's everywhere right now. So
yeah,
can't ignore it.
No. And I'm going to though do my best to ignore it until then, and just kind of, yeah, cross my fingers and just try not to get inundated with the just massive deluge of information and ads and everything else. But
yeah, even from here, I see a ton. You know, we don't read a lot of like US based news, but it's still even like on BBC and stuff, it's just everywhere. It's crazy. I would just turn the TV off for a month, I think, if I was in the States right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, but one thing I want to kind of talk about is that's fresh in my mind outside of the election to really just get that out of my head was something you and I were chatting about before we hit recording. And it was funny. It's like, I'm in the middle of migrating over to Castos. And it's like, hey, Craig, like I kind of just recorded a video of just like me doing this live so I could just give my thoughts of like kind of user testing stuff of just what I was running into and this and that. And we had a good talk about just kind of the ins and outs of how things work. And it was funny talking with you about it because, and like even just going through it myself, I'm just like, I know this doesn't work the way Craig wants it to. I'm like, I know when I probably bring up some of these things, I'll be able to hear like the frustration in his voice. He's like, yep, I know what you're talking about, this and that. And it's like, we all
taking it the scab.
Yeah. And it's like, I just feel like as founders, we all, especially bootstrapped, especially in these kind of like early days where you're getting traction, you have customers. So they're telling you when things don't work the right way, but there's still so much you need to do. It's like, we all have these things that we want to improve in the UX and the UI, but just for one reason or another, aren't able to get to it. And I just kind of think this could be a fun topic to dig into is just how you're navigating this, because you're sort of close to a spot where you're going to be able to really make a big push on fixing some of these things up. So I guess, can you just kind of share your perspective on how you've navigated feature development versus cleanup versus everything else?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So I think that just in terms of like the buckets, there's like feature development, like building a brand new thing from our perspective, at least there is cleanup stuff, which is like upgrading Laravel versions or fixing bugs. Like it's time to do this kind of stuff, which is like what we're talking about, I think, which is like, okay, it's time to update our onboarding workflow because we haven't done it in a year and a lot of stuff has changed. And that last one is I think what we're talking about, which is there are things that are not perfect. And I think that I would guess if you talk to like the Collison brothers, they would say that about Stripe even, right? It's yeah. Like there's stuff that just gets them every time they log in. And, you know, first of all, you were very kind to like record a screencast and be like objective about what you see. And it's great. It's like emotionally hard to, it's hard to have too many of those conversations with people that you like know and respect, because like at some level you take it personally, and you try not to, of course, but you take it personally because like a lot of our identities is wrapped up in this. And I'm not saying this to try to make you feel bad, but like, just like as an exercise, it is super helpful, like on a personal and like personal development perspective for me, to just take the feedback and really take it and not make excuses, you know, but to say like, I really appreciate you taking the time to share how you kind of felt going through that, because I think the reality is like, we're all super close to what we do, and like how we log in and sign up for our app makes a ton of sense because we're the ones that like, you know, at least laid out the page flow, you know, much less like coded it or whatever. But
for listeners, just to be clear, my use case is like very, it's sort of an edge case where it's like coming from an existing podcast, migrating hosts. I have a website that I don't want to touch too much. And it's like kind of managing all of these conflicts. And at the end of it, like I was able to sort of figure out the path forward. And having gone through several other podcast hosts, it's not as though like they've all got it figured out. I was like, no, like the only reason I did this is because all the other hosts for the most part are just like a mess. And there were just a few small things around the way that Castles has set up where I just had a few questions. And it's these types of things where it's like you can make progress and feel like you've got a pretty good like 80% solution, but then these edge cases come up and then these other things come up where it's just like it can add that little bit of friction.
Yeah. And I think that like a part of this equation is our personalities, you know, is like if you're a designer, you're going to spend way more time on this stuff and less time choosing to not work on this and creating new features. If I'm not a designer, I'm more like kind of utilitarian to say like, I understand, you know, this thing, whatever, whether it's onboarding or how a feature works or whatever is 90% done. To take the extra 10% would be, you know, 2 weeks worth of work. I would rather go build this feature. Like, I don't know if that's right. And I think there's times when that's right and times when that's wrong. But I think that like the type of person that we are dictates how that decision is made to a fair extent. Cause it's like, how important do we think this button size is, or like, or is going to do this other thing more important? And I don't know if there's a right answer. I think it's a balance for sure. I don't know what the right answer is. Like when you go to sign up for your app, like if you guys have these kind of reviews, or if you just generally like balancing that, like how easy is it to use or how good is this thing versus we need to move on to the next project.
To other people, I'm probably very annoying about this, but it's just like, I don't know what personality trait drives it, but it's just like, I feel like next steps just have to be clear. If I'm going into takeout place, if I'm going into a doctor's office, wherever I'm going, it's like, I hate not knowing what to do. Like, oh, am I supposed to come to the counter? Like, which there's three windows. Which one am I supposed to go to? Is there a line? Do I sit and you call me? Like, do I order here and pick up? Like, it's just like so many little cues. Like, I just hate uncertainty in general. I hate the anxiety of like feeling like I'm going to make the wrong decision, which is probably where a lot of it comes from, is just like looking dumb and just like doing the wrong thing. So I'm just kind of hyper aware of that piece of it. And so for us, I try not to let that OCD-esque attitude like drive everything, because there does have to be a balance. But what we really figured out is, okay, a lot of it comes down to the spec process and really digging into how this feature, this functionality is going to work in advance. Because a lot of times what would happen is Matt, in the beginning, there were just so many things for both of us to be working on, where it's just very easy for me to just pick, all right, Matt, just run with this. Let me know what you come up with and we'll go from there. And then I would go behind the scenes and just work on all the things I had to do. He'd come up with a feature and I was like, oh, okay, like that technically works, but this is going to be like super confusing to the user. And like, I don't know if they want to use it that way. And then we'd try to figure out, okay, like how can we adapt it? And a lot of those fixes, then it was like, all right, like this isn't worth it to change because it does work. We'll just have to spend some more time on documentation support and this and that. But then it would just get to points where it's just like these things just add up. And there's so many just little questions. And I'm sure the user has in the back of their mind of like, is this what it's going to do? Or is it going to do that? Or like, what happens if I do this? And it's just like, I think those little questions just add up to friction. And that's really the last thing people want to experience, especially in the onboarding part. So for us, we've just tried to spend a bit more time in advance thinking about it. But this is all against a really long roadmap of other things we want to do. So we still make trade-offs and saying, all right, like if we wanted this to be 100% done, like you were saying, it could add weeks, if not a month, to development process, but like 80% is good enough. But let's just make sure it's truly an 80% rather than like a janky, like 60% where no one really knows what's going on. So I don't have like a clear answer. I've just found that being more deliberate makes my laundry list of like these things don't work well, less like overbearing mm-hmm. on like the day to day. But we still are, we still have like, I'm literally hiring a front end engineer now whose primary job is just going to be to work with me and fix these things. And it's just like, I don't want to pull us off feature development. I don't want to pull us off of like backend work or anything else like that. It's just, but like, I just want these things to work better. And I haven't quantified the value of it, but it's just, I feel like if you can make it a seamless enough experience, then an intuitive experience, then like everything else matters a lot less. But yeah, if we just haven't, we frankly just haven't done a good job of it up until this point.
One thing that we really struggle with, I say we, me, like say I'm the project or the product leader, is knowing when to take the time for it. We try to work in, like we're in feature mode now, and then we're in maintenance and update mode later. We try to work in those kind of buckets. So like right now we're very much working on a big feature. It should be ready by the end of this week. And then we're going to go really for the end of the year into like, we're just tidying things up in the app mode. So we try to do that. But the other question I had for you, man, is like, we talk a lot about like making good decisions and making them easier, like in past episodes. Do you have any, I hate to say metrics, around when you feel like you need to really pay attention to this? Or is it all just gut feel? You know, is it like trial to paid conversion ratio is this, that means we need to work on that? Or is it always just like, this thing has an emotional connection for you, or this one customer that you really kind of know and respect says something, and so you pull all your developers off what they're working on to go fix this bug? Like, how do you try to put some rules around that so it's not recreating the wheel from a decision-making perspective all the time?
Yeah, I don't have metrics on this. And like, I this is something that's probably too gut-driven for me, but it just is the way it is right now. And there's a balance of it where some I try not to, in getting outside of the support inbox by bringing on someone 5 days a week has helped, because there'll be times where it's just like, you get a series of emails about the same exact issue, and it's like, we still fucking have this problem. And then it's like, I try not to just like throw a wrench into the gears of everything developers are working on. But like, sometimes I do. Like, sometimes it's just like, no, like this, we can't have some of these just like sloppy mistakes. And so there was a ton of that early on, which a lot of that was on me for just not being as disciplined about it as I could be. But there's also like, in those early days, that everything just feels so precarious, where it's like, you feel like everything's on fire, and every like bug, every annoyance, you're just like, we can't just keep having all these things. Like, you don't want this to be the one that like breaks a camel's back, and then like the business goes crashing down and all this. And like, that's not going to happen, but sometimes it feels that way. And so when you're kind of on top of the support inbox and just you're putting out fires all day, it can just make things feel a lot worse than they are. But then like, as revenues grew, as we got to default alive, as I got someone else in the support inbox, it's easier for me to take a step back and be more deliberate about how I prioritize things. But it still is gut. Like, it's still not me looking at specific metrics and trying to go from there. It's really just gut. But you and I were talking before about how you were saying a few months ago, you kind of had done a big push on improving the onboarding experience, but just the UI in general. Now you're focused on features. And then you're saying like the rest of the year is going to be more on the UI and UX work. How did you get to that point where it's like, all right, like this split makes sense. Like, now's the time to focus on the feature. Then we'll get to that later. Like, how did that come about for you?
Very roughly. Like, I don't, it's not intentional, I guess. Like I make it seem. Maybe like we kind of backed into it, but I like it and our team likes the idea. It's kind of an extension of like the shape up, like 6 weeks on, 2 weeks off kind of thing, where if we really push the product forward in a really meaningful way, like we are with this big feature we'll release like maybe later this week, then like that part of it we feel like is done for now. You know, like this feature is done. Of course, there's gonna be bugs and stuff we have to fix there, but like emotionally almost, we want to take a break from like creating something new to going back and working on the stuff we already have. And I think that like part of that too is that like when you create something new, in a lot of ways, like it amplifies some of those things that you know you need to go back and work on because more people are coming in or they're using this thing that they didn't used to use that much, like this part of this app or this feature. And maybe like that last part is really why we feel like once we go build a new feature, and it might not be all of the team, you know, like we have three developers now. So like two of them maybe will spend the majority of the next 6 weeks on this kind of stuff. And one of them will be, you know, developing a new feature. But I don't know, it just feels right that like, I think that from a developer, like from their emotional perspective, they can't always be building a new thing too, because then it neglects all this other stuff that just sits there, you know, like upgrading Laravel versions or this bug that's been there for a long time. Like you gotta, and I'm terrible about this, like you gotta prioritize those to get them done. And like as a product owner, like spending two or three developer days to upgrade Laravel versions is like the worst waste of time I can imagine. But like, then you get like, if you get like three major versions behind, you're totally screwed, you know? And so it's like, you gotta like eat your vegetables. I don't know, that was a pretty rambling answer, but it just kind of like feels like a good cadence from like a product perspective and like their emotions.
Is it literally kind of 1 6-week cycle, product one on clean up and that sort of thing, and it, like it goes back and forth, or is it just
no,
you have enough like
three on and one off, okay, or something? Okay. You know, like three really yeah. developing features and one to just spend on optimizing everything. Yeah.
This is where for me I just feel like we have so much more we like need to build and so much more that truly will move the needle, and we're at least getting to a spot where I can see the light at the end of the tunnel. There's the true core things that I think we need to get our product to best in class. There's not as nearly as much anymore. And it's like, I want us to get there soon. But as we focus on that, it's just like the list of just all these things that just bug the shit out of me. When people email about like, why is this how it works? I'm like, yeah, that is how it works. It shouldn't though. It's like, that's not logical, but here is how it works. It's just so challenging to do that and just kind of just eat glass every day. Just be like, yeah, my baby's super ugly. Like, just please don't judge it too hard and just figure out how to work with it. It's just like, I don't know. And that's, it's really hard for my personality to balance those two. And that's why I finally have just been like, all right, especially when also balancing that against refactoring and cleaning up things that are breaking, because those are kind of the 1-2 punch that's really killed us, in my opinion, is data issues that cause a lot of support problems and cause us to constantly pull the developers off of what they're working on to fix the issues as they come up. And that doesn't give customers a good experience. We're usually able to fix it, but it's still not a great experience. And it doesn't let our developers focus. But then at the same time, it's all those support questions that come in that I know represent frustrated customers, but more so like frustrated trial users that don't convert. And it's just, yeah, a never-ending mess of sorting through that. So it's really nice that we're at a spot where we're able to bring in a front-end engineer to just kind of be tasked with focusing on like the superficial stuff, but it's still like the deep UX things and just the cleanup that I think makes it different. So, I mean, I'm hoping it goes well, but just for my own sanity's sake.
Yeah. Yeah. What I was asking about like metrics before, one of the like ways I try to make this decision of like, when is it time to go back and focus on this stuff is growth, honestly, right? Because that's like at the end of the day, that's really all that matters. So like you can say it's trial to paid conversion ratio or it's churn or whatever, or it's like the plan that people sign up for because we kind of feature gate. So like how well are we presenting those features in the trial or in the marketing copy? But like, and I look at like, I hate to say, like this is terrible. Like, am I happy with our growth? Yeah. Then like, this is not our biggest problem. I don't hate saying that out loud, but like saying that out loud sounds terrible, but I do think that that is not a terrible way to look at it, is say like, we're growing the way I want to be growing on this trajectory. We're going to get where we want to go. This new feature will open a bunch of doors for us. And I think that that's overall better, or we're not growing like we want, or our churn is a problem, or whatever that signals like a real product problem, then it's time to go look at this. I don't know like how right that is, but I think that that's part of like how I look at when it's time to do this.
No, I think that's smart. And I think in the back of my mind, that's what has helped me push off my like natural instinct to just be, no, that this needs, it's not like I'm not a perfectionist by any means, but when there's just a pile of imperfections just in my face every day, it's like, I just want to get that out of there. But yeah, it's just, it's prioritizing. It's thinking about, okay, is churn the issue? Not is it like we always can use better churn, but like, are we growing fast enough? Because right now for us, honestly, churn is super high. I think just in our industry, it's going to be higher than average, and it's not going to be that close to like typical like B2B SaaS numbers, but it's definitely high, but we're outgrowing that. And I think we're not going to be able to do that forever. But while we can, it's like, I'm going to keep doubling down on growth. But then, yeah, it's just every once in a while, when we do get a break in things and there's a few just like obvious fixes that we can make that will make a big impact on user experience, we'll kind of prioritize that. But it's for us, honestly, it's whenever we've made improvements on UX, it's been through adding more people to our team. Because when it was just Matt really on the product, I just would have to just deal with it. Because I'm like, no, it's not even close. Like him working on more features is going to move the needle significantly more than having him go back and clean up some of these things. But when we got Brian on board, I mean, he did some heavy refactoring, but then during that, I could kind of give him a few things to knock off the list as well. It let us move forward there without slowing down on the product. But now, yeah, it's just, I think as we're kind of getting closer to that best in class spot we're really going after, I think it's time to make another push on it. But this is kind of like my hypothesis. I'm curious to hear how you take it. But for me with marketing, and this is why like I'm just very anal about removing as much friction as possible, because I truly feel like on the marketing side of things, the goal of onboarding emails, of everything that happens during a trial, is to get them into the app. It's to, whether it's creating curiosity, it's creating excitement about the possibilities or whatever else it is, like, I don't care. The goal is to get them into the app and then have the app sell itself. And we provide better ways to deepen people's relationship with the app through strategy videos and everything else to help with that. But at the end of the day, I feel like the more you have to sell them on the app rather than having the app sell itself, you're going to be fighting a very uphill battle, especially when so many markets are super competitive. It's going to be really hard to stand out. And as I've kind of gone on like testing a bunch of different podcast hosts and just looking at different software and just like even through signing up for new tools for our own company, I just feel like the vast majority of companies suck at this. Like they don't have a good user experience. It's super confusing to use. And I guess if every option sucks, no one's really at an advantage or a disadvantage, because like it's just kind of whichever one you find first, you'll probably, or whenever, whichever one you find when the pain is the highest, you're going to push through and just get it set up. And especially in B2B, there's usually more urgency around a lot of this stuff. But like as you get into the kind of prosumer or more even just straight up B2C, like I feel like Castles is in a similar position to us, where there's definitely enterprises, especially as you go into private podcasting and everything else. But like a lot of kind of your bread and butter are more casual users. And I think it's just like, if you can be the one that they sign up for and just get it and just can get started very quickly without trying to figure out, what does this button do? Am I going down the right path? Am I going to be able to make these changes? Whatever else. Like if you can do that, you're going to win. And that kind of is what drives a lot of my thought. Does that resonate at all with you?
Yeah, for sure. And that's like the big kind of update we did a couple months ago, was to get really opinionated about our onboarding workflow, so people don't have to think and make those decisions. Like, we ask you to make decisions because we need to know things, but to make it really opinionated to say like, it's this or it's that, and then click this button and then click this button, and not like, yeah, they shouldn't have to know what to do next. It should be just the one big button in the middle of the screen that does the next thing. We've seen a nice boost from it. I think the app experience is an extension of marketing, like you're saying. And as we do better with that, I think we see more success. But it's like this evolution because, well, fortunately or unfortunately, like marketing is easier to update than like app UI and stuff. And something is always lagging, you know?
Do you, you've talked a bit about analytics and you said like things improved. Do you have like real analytics? Real meaning like do they exist? Because like for us, it's like we kind of have Google Analytics set up, but it's not working correctly. It's like we don't really have analytics outside of what like Profitwell gives us. Have you guys gone like a step beyond that?
Yeah, we have Amplitude set up and we have the same triggers that go into Drip. And it's probably 8 or 10 different activation triggers that we send as events to those two things. And and I say that and I sound all fancy and then we never look at it. But all of that stuff drives our onboarding emails. So our onboarding emails are really variable depending on what people have done, to the point of like there's different workflows that people go into, there's different branches, and then there's like the liquid tags within the emails depending on what people have done and custom fields that they have. We don't look at Amplitude data very often in terms of like that flow and what people are doing and how many people are getting to this step and how many people are skipping that step. But thinking forward to like, okay, it's going to be time soon to really look at all this. We'll 100% go look at Amplitude data and we'll turn Hotjar on some pages in the app. So we have Hotjar running in the background in the app just for like page views and like conversions and stuff. It's a lot of the same conversion data that we get in Amplitude, but then we'll turn on like heat mapping and screen recording and stuff like that.
Are you on the free plan for Amplitude or are you on one of the like, okay.
Yeah.
How long did it actually take you to get all those events set up?
It took Jonathan about a week to get all of that for both, because it's same stuff for Drip and for Amplitude. So it was about a week, but then it was, you know, several days beforehand of Denise and I walking through like, what do we want to know from a product perspective and from an onboarding and like trigger perspective?
Yeah, because I've had a card in Notion get data into Drip so that like I can have it actually. So like my background, I used to be like obsessed with trial emails, and that's a lot of the work I did at Hubstaff and at Groove into segmentation and all of that. I still like think it's super important. But yeah, like right now in our Drip setup, we have Stripe information. So we know what plan someone's on when they sign up, like if they're on a trial, if they cancel, that kind of stuff. But we don't know what they're doing in the app during the trial. And yeah, it's something that has been in Notion for at least 8 months, maybe longer, I'm guessing. And it's like we talk about prioritizing UI UX work over like feature development. But to me, all of that has gotten prioritized over marketing stuff. And it's only been recently, again, where I feel like we're kind of nearing we at least are closer on the roadmap. I was like, let's just get that done. But we've just continuously pushed it back because kind of going back to what you were saying before on growth, it's like, we're growing. I don't think me redoing the entire trial sequence, I think it'll help, but I don't think it's going to move the needle as much as some other things.
That's an interesting thing to say, though, because I have this concept of like in the stock market, like there's stocks that underperform or overperform expectations, you know, and I have times where I feel like we're underperforming like my growth expectation, even though we're certainly growing and by a lot of accounts are successful, you know, but I do feel like even though we're growing, a lot of times I feel like we're underperforming. And so I look at some of these things, whether it's like the actual data or just like this sore thumb that is always there that like I have. And I just think like, even though we're growing, we could be doing so much better if we took care of this thing. I don't know. I guess I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth because I feel like that, but then I don't allocate the resources to address some of these things and put them somewhere else. And maybe the answer is because I feel like it's an even bigger lever that we're pulling by creating a feature.
It's tough. It all goes back. I mean, we've talked a lot about prioritization because I just feel like that is, in my opinion, the most important, one of the probably the most important skill you can have, especially in an early stage startup, is figuring out what things to work on and when. And it's all just trying to be somewhat rational about what things will have the biggest impact on growth. And there's no like straightforward way of doing it.
Here's one for you that I'd love to hear how you guys do it, because we're hiring our second customer support person right now. And so this is going to change like a lot of how this works. But how does your new customer support person bring that feedback to you as the product person?
I mean, this is still very new. So what we've been doing, and fortunately, we were able to hire one of our customers for this role, and they're a regular user of it. So they really get it as well. And to be kind of blunt about it, I think if we were to hire someone from outside of our space, I honestly don't know how much I would listen to the feedback from the customer support person. And like, that sounds bad to say, but it's just like, we have lived this product for so long, and like we still, there are so many obvious things I know we have to fix that right now, I just don't see how much feedback would change our priorities. I'm sure as we get down that list, it'd be good to know sticking points and other things, but like right now we just know so many just bigger things. And so for this person though, because they are someone whose opinion, I think they get the insights that matter and can kind of weight that more than someone completely new to the space could. I had listened to them. So what we do is every Monday we have our team call. And when we get to Ross and kind of dig into his questions and stuff as well, he shares just his general findings. Part of it is him asking us, like, is this on the roadmap? So we can give better replies to people, just knowing what's coming down the pike. But he'll also say, yeah, this could be something else to think about. And then we sort of just chat about it on the call quickly then. Oftentimes it is something we already were thinking about. And so maybe we'll change the prioritization of that a little bit based on the conversation. A lot of times it truly is some of the smaller, those little friction things in the user experience that I wasn't thinking about as much. And then, yeah, well, I'll jot down a note so that when we get the new engineer on board, like that's one of the kind of quick fixes they can get in there. But yeah, it's a really informal process where I just ask, I don't even know how he's, I think he might in Notion just keep a page or something where he like takes down notes, or maybe it's just in the back of his head. I don't know. But yeah, it's just, we ask him just kind of be aware of that stuff. And then we talk about it as a team, but it's definitely not like a formal process. How are you doing it right now?
Yeah. So right now, Eileen is our support rep, and she's wonderful. She also is a user, and she's a technical person. So she does a lot of like WordPress, like consulting and development work. So she and I have a weekly call, which kind of doubles as our like one-on-one, like for us, those are a lot more like personal and professional development stuff, but also like what's going on in support this week. And in those, we talk through specific tickets sometimes, because we talk through tickets like almost every day, but we just do it during a call on Fridays. And then if there are trends she's seeing, she brings those up. And then we have a weekly Monday call also. And then if those are kind of like validated, then we talk through them on Monday so that like the development team can chime in on like what's going on and what it would take to fix it, or is it a bug, or is that how things are supposed to work, and those kind of things. So that's how we do it now. And I think like we're hiring to bring on a second support person, and I think the process will be essentially the same, with the exception that those two will have to consolidate that information into, you know, a place where we all can kind of digest it. And like we've seen this like first with development, bringing on a second developer, and then like in marketing, like with Denise and Matt, and now in support, where like when you go from one person owning a whole like quote division to two people, like you have to have some organization around it, because everything's just in your head right now. And then like that's not okay, because then the other new person that comes in feels like totally ostracized when you say, yeah, well, I just knew that, or yeah, I noted that, and I'm going to talk to the team about it or Craig about it. But if it's not like in Notion or in Jira or whatever you use, it doesn't exist. So yeah, I don't have a way that I think we're going to do that yet, but it's definitely top of mind, because I want very much to not be in Help Scout after we hire this other person. And to to be able to do that. One is like having the confidence that between this new person and Eileen, they can answer all the tickets, but also that we have this feedback loop of like, okay, this is a thing. Like, this is a real thing. This is either a bug or this is a confusing way that we're wording something. And like the appropriate things come to the surface at the right time. And honestly, I think this is the hardest thing for me to get is like, one, like the transfer of knowledge to support people, because I just have a ton of shit in my head and like it, I'm not disciplined enough to put it all in Notion. And so that's terrible because I'm not enabling those people to be successful. But then also like instilling or communicating how I make those decisions of like what I think a real bug is and what I think is like an acceptable way that our stuff just works to other people so that they can go make those decisions in my place, I think is very hard. And I'm not looking forward to it, but I know it's important.